Track B, the Firewalk Tool.
Which one? How about this one?
Okay, looks like we're about started. So I'd like to introduce Mike Schiffman, and this is a Firewalk presentation. And if everybody could give him an initial round of applause, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Everyone ready to go? Good. I suppose I should start by introducing myself. My name is Mike Schiffman. I am a senior security architect currently working for Internet Security Systems. The presentation I'm going to be doing today is on Firewalk, which is a tool, and everyone can hear me okay, right? Yeah, good. Firewalk is both a tool and a technique, and it was developed and written by myself and David Goldsmith, who I don't think was able to join us this time, while we were working over at Cambridge Technology Partners. Originally, I think the white paper was published in October of last year, and since then, several revisions of the code have been, revised, and the newest one I'll be demoing today. Some of you may be familiar with it. Hopefully, most of you aren't. Hopefully, you guys will get something out of this talk today. So, I'd also like to add, sometimes I tend to ramble on. I talk very quickly sometimes. If you missed something or didn't understand it, please, shout at me or raise a hand, and, I'll answer questions about anything at any point in time. That also will work against me because you'll ask me questions about anything and I'll derail entirely and go off on a tangent. So I leave that up to you to try and keep me on track if I do that. Anyhow, the talk is going to be broken down into the presentation of the PowerPoint material, and then afterwards I'm going to reboot. And thanks to the E&Y guys, especially George, I was able to use their equipment, and we're going to be able to demo the tool for you. And, George spent his lunch over here helping me out, so thanks a lot, George. Anywho, so we're going to start a brief overview of everything I'm going to be covering. Start with an introduction, overview of the tool, and the technique generally. I'll move on to the driving force, why this is important, why we did this. We'll cover the internals of the tool, how it works and whatnot. Then I'll talk about the actual implementation of the tool and some of the limitations. Then we'll talk about risk mitigation. How do you prevent the risks that are associated with this technique? And the future, which actually is sort of nowish because I do have the new version of the tool mostly written. I will first start with some terminology. I need to define a few things for you guys. I'm sure everyone probably knows what these mean, but within the context of this talk, they have specific meanings. First is access control list, and an ACL is simply a set of rules that enforce a security policy. And in the scope of this talk, an ACL solely applies to network policy. Obviously, generally that's pretty standard stuff. A router gateway. These two terms are going to be used interchangeably, and they refer to simply a multi-home device that forwards packets. It may or may not have a restrictive ACL in place. And a firewall is simply a router or a gateway that does have this ACL in place. And requirements for this talk, reasonable familiarity with the TCP/IP protocol suite. If you don't have it, and I say something you don't understand, feel free to raise a hand, ask a question. I will be covering most of the material you need to know. Let's hope that doesn't continue. I'm going to actually try and go through this real quick, so hopefully we can avoid the sirens and whatnot, because that's going to be distracting. Anyhow, firewalking, if I want to break it down to 31 words. By the way, you guys will obviously have these slides in front of you. They've changed a little bit since then, so if you want to try and keep up. Firewalking uses a traceroute-like IP packet analysis to determine whether or not a particular packet can pass from the attacker's host to a destination host through a packet filtering device. And what this boils down to, using the techniques presented here, you'll be able to scan a firewall and determine the ACLs in place without actually connecting to any ports on any machine, necessarily. A little bit more detail about this. We can map these pass-through ports, which a pass-through port is, in essence, a port that allows a particular protocol and a particular packet through a port-protocol combination. And you notice I talk about ports. So the talk is going to center around UDP and TCP as far as upper layer protocols go. And by mapping all of these pass-through ports on a firewall, we can determine the ACL, gateway ACL, in case firewall ACL. We can also map host behind potentially restrictive filtering frameworks using firewall techniques. And why should this be important? I think it's pretty obvious why it's important. You know, network recon, mapping a network. Yesterday, we all listened to Cheswick's talk about how he's doing internet mapping and whatnot. And actually, the techniques that he used there are slightly employed here. I mean, he's using traceroute. Half of firewall is basically traceroute, and in security auditing, of course. Base concepts. In order to fully understand how firewall works, we need to fully understand how traceroute works. And now I'm going to go into a little bit of background about traceroute. If you guys know this, just bear with me quickly. Traceroute is a network discovery tool that was written about 10 and a half years ago by Van Jacobsen. And it's designed to map out all hosts en route to a particular destination. The tool was written about 10 and a half years ago. It's got, if anyone's ever looked at the code, it's very monolithic in its architecture. It's got one large main module. It's relatively portable. It works reasonably well. However, an associate of mine, Jeremy Rauch, who's going to be talking later today, we decided that we wanted to update it and rewrite it. This was after the Firewalk stuff. So we rewrote Traceroute, and we named it TracerX. It's sort of an updated Traceroute. It's portable, it's efficient, it's robust, it does parallel scans. It does a lot of things that Traceroute doesn't do. It has a very robust and widely varied reporting system, generates different kinds of reports and whatnot. And again, this is sort of as an aside, and I'll quickly be done with this. And TracerX was written, of course, on top of LibNet, which is what Firewalk was written on top of. And for those of you who don't know, LibNet is a sort of the packet injection analog to libpcap. LibNet allows you to portably write programs that will be accessing low-level packet creation facilities, such as raw sockets or BPF in the case of BSD, or a sock packet in Linux, things of that nature, DLPI and whatnot. Anyway, back on track, Traceroute. Traceroute by default uses UDP packets to at the transport layer to work its magic. The Windows NT 98-95 version uses ICMP echo packets, but I think you can force the newer versions of Unix Traceroute to do that also. And Traceroute basically works by sending out packets with a monotonically increasing IPTTL, and it ends when it reaches a predefined maximum hop count or when it gets a certain type of terminal packet. And we see we've got an IP header up there. I'm not going to go over the fields. You really can't see it up here at all, but it's in front of you. And the field that is blocked out is the IPTTL field. Let me define a few of these terms before we move on. Monotonically increasing. That simply means that the TTL in the probe in question increases deterministically with respect to the packet sent. It's pretty basic. Maximum hop count. The internet is not infinitely deep. To avoid routing loops, we have this thing called the TTL field. It is a maximum of 255. Every time a packet crosses from one hop to another hop, one router to another, this TTL field is decremented if it is to be forwarded. When it reaches zero, an error message is sent back and the packet is dropped. This is to prevent routing loops and other types of misbehaving applications from doing bad things. Traceroute limits its scans to a default maximum of 30 hops. Firewalk is 25. The terminal packet. Terminal packet is the packet that you're going to receive when you've actually met your destination host. For a UDP scan, this is going to be an ICMP port unreachable message, hopefully. And for an ICMP echo scan, this is going to be an ICMP echo reply packet. And the reason why you might not get your... All right, good. Now, what's the general protocol? Do I just keep going? Or do I just talk real quickly in between the... Somebody's going to be held accountable for this, I hope. There's got to be one guy who just fears for his job. If it wasn't for the sound, the lights are kind of cool, though. So how's everyone doing today? All right, good. You guys look like a nice crowd.
May I have your attention, please?
Right.
The alarm you have just heard is the part of the hotel.
Okay, so here we've got our sample network.
Thank you.
Thank you. Here we got our sample network. This is what we're going to be doing some of our trace. This is not the network here, by the way, obviously. This is just a... Make an excellent picture.
The reason for the alarm is now being investigated. We will keep you advised. Thank you.
These lights flashing and everything. Okay, I'm not. This is ridiculous. How many people have complained so far and gotten free stuff? Has anyone complained yet and gotten like a room comp or free meals? We could just finish up the talk through correspondence or something. I'll just multicast it when I get home. Here's our sample network. Looks really simple, but... I think we're going to be coming back here next year.
Thank you.
Okay. Sample network. Right. Hang in there, because it's going to get real good after this. All the cool stuff is coming up. I've got it. Okay, quickly. Sample network.
Keep going.
Did you wrap someone up over there?
The hotel's having technical difficulties, and there was water in a hallway someplace, and you don't know if it's short-circuiting or affecting an alarm system. So hopefully they have it resolved right now, but just to give you an update on
like,
what's
like
going
I've
on.
Been saying, you know, brand new hotel, some assembly still may be required. Like I said, sample network. If you can make it out on your the slides in front of you. That's what's happening. Are they legible at all? I mean, on the way left, you've got your source host. The way right, you've got your destination host. The arrows indicate potential routes in between all these hosts. And actually, as a really quick aside, if anyone in the room can figure out my name, can you guys read the names of the machines down there? If anyone can figure out the naming convention, except for the people that I've told, then I'd be pretty... Well, it's actually not that difficult, I suppose. There's probably a few people in the room that might know. Anyway, here's our sample network. And this is going to be a sample trace route. We're starting at the source host. our destination host is a destination host way on the right. So we sent out our first packet, and we're not worrying about how the routing decisions are made. That's way beyond the scope of this talk. We sent out a packet with an IP TTL of 1. It goes out one hop over to Bush, expires there. Bush sends back an ICMP TTL expired in transit message. The source. Right. So you understand how this is going to. If we don't have to evacuate, I don't want to hear it anymore. Okay, anyway, when we reach our destination, which in this case is 5 hops away, we get a different type of message back. Instead of getting the ICMP TTL expired in transit messages, we're going to get an ICMP port unreachable message. And that's what we look for as a terminal packet with a default standard traceroute. So let's talk about doing some information reconnaissance using traceroute. There's a few things that we can do. Dave and I turn on protocol subterfuge and nascent port seeding. And using these techniques, we can actually view hosts behind a firewall that might otherwise prevent us from seeing them with by normal means. And protocol subterfuge is not really all that sneaky, but it's something that works. Let's take the rather simplistic example of a network where the firewall is blocking all incoming packets except for maybe, say, ICMP echo packets. Blocking only ICMP echo packets on the way in. The 10.0.0.9 hop is the one that's being blocked. That's the firewall. That's what we're not able to get past with the normal standard traceroute scan. These are UDP packets. The firewall says, no, I'm dropping you. You violate my ACL. So what do? We simply use an ICMP echo packets. Doing that, we get a lot further inside the network. Like I said, that's rather simplistic. Let's take a more common example of maybe you've got a network with a firewall that's, you're not really sure what it's letting in, but you're pretty sure they're doing DNS inside there. So they're going to let through UDP 53 packets. We try our normal traceroute scan again. We see that we get blocked at the same point. So now we start thinking, well, I know the port that I'm thinking, yeah, 53 is going to work, so we want to try that. But traceroute, by default, is going to increment the port numbers. For the source port, it picks a random source port number. Destination port, it starts at, by default, what's it, 34, I don't remember. It's 32.768 plus 666, I think, something like that. Some sort of odd number that he picked. He picked it for a good reason, that is, when the packet reaches the destination host, the terminal packet, we want it to be an ICMP port unreachable message, at least for traceroute. That's what it's looking for. If there happens to be a process listening at that port, then you're going to get back something else. You might not get back anything. So we pick a really high-level port, and chances are nothing's going to be listening there. But anyway, that's no good for our scan here because it's going to be denied by the ACL. So what we do is traceroute allows us to specify a starting port. So we want to do that, but what port do we choose? How do we figure this out? So we use this little formula down here. Traceroute for each round by default is going to send out 3 probes. Each probe, the port is incremented, so we need to figure that into our equation too. So we've got 8 hops here. Eight hops times that. 3 probes by default. The target port is 53. You see the formula at the bottom. The math is not difficult. It's algebra. P0 is our starting port that we want to use. So what's going to happen is it start out at 28. It's going to increment all the ports until it gets to the firewall. By then, all of a sudden, the packet itself is acceptable to the firewall's ACL. It lets it right through. We get one hop beyond. We've gotten to the firewall. Packet expires there. TTL expired in transit, sent back. Then traceroute sends out another packet, and of course this one's denied. This is actually a small enough crowd that I could probably actually throw questions out there, but in interest of time, I'll probably just not do that. The reason why this happens is because traceroute continues to increment. All right. I like her.
Traceroute
continues to increment the destination port number. It is now port 54 for the very next packet, which is denied. This whole thing, this scenario right here, was actually something that happened to us while we were doing an audit while we were at Cambridge. So this is before Firewalk ever existed. This was the predecessor to this is what got us thinking about Firewalk. So what we did at that point was we wrote a patch to Traceroute, the static port patch, which allowed you to specify a flag. I think it was dash capital S, which stopped the port incrementation. And these are real world examples. Actually, we just changed the IP addresses. We got like four or five hops deeper. It was a really deep network, and we got pretty far in there just by doing that. Anyhow, so we started thinking, what more can we do with this? There's something else here. Well, Traceroute works at the IP layer. You have your access control lists, which the ones that we're interested in anyway tend to work at the transport layer. We're interested in ports are open. So say, for example, you have a prohibitive filter on a gateway, which in this case, as far as we're concerned, is a firewall, which is dropping probes. What we can do is we determine the last host that responded with a valid, time expired. In the example above, it's the host just before the firewall. Actually, depending on which example we look at, it might be the firewall itself. Well, we tried different protocols through this. We come up with what is termed our waypoint host. And now we can start talking about the basics of firewalk. Firewalking requires three hosts. You've got your firewalking or attacking host. I use the term attacking when we might not actually be doing anything malicious. It's just I've done several talks, and oftentimes I'm doing things where we have to talk about the attacking host and whatnot, so it just sort of it fits. We have the gateway or the waypoint host from above. This is your target that you're scanning. This is what we want to know. What ports are open on this? The destination host or the metric. The terms on the left are the firewalk terms. Terms on the right are I don't know what terms those are. Dave came up with those. I like mine better. The destination host actually is the destination host from like a Traceroute scan. This is the host that would send the terminal packet back in the scan. For example, the ICMP port on reach or the ICMP echo reply. This destination host has to be behind, the metric host has to be behind your gateway. The metric host is what directs the scan. This is a host that does not necessarily need to ever be contacted. It's better if it isn't. In fact, previous versions of Firewalk, if anyone here has ever used the tool, will know you had nothing but problems if your metric host happened to be directly behind your gateway. In other words, one hop next to it. If it's a few hops behind it, it's all great. Everything works as it's supposed to. We'll talk about that momentarily. So what we do, basically we send a packet towards the metric host. I say towards because, again, we're not trying to contact this host. We're just using that as a sort of a flagpole to direct our scan. We set a timer. If we get a response back before this timer expires, we're pretty sure that port's open. If not, the port's probably closed. However, there are a lot of reasons why we might not get a response, some of which are false negatives. Other, you've got IP is a lossy network. We're sending out, single packets that can easily be dropped. And we repeat this process for all interesting port and protocol combos. So let's move on to the internals of Firewalk. This is actually, now we're sort of segueing into the tool. Firewalk has two phases. It has a network discovery phase and a scanning phase. This network discovery phase is, for all intents and purposes, a Traceroute scan. And what we need this because we need to get the correct TTL in order to bind the scan. And what we do is we initiate a Traceroute scan towards the metric host, stopping when we've hit our gateway host. And as soon as we hit that gateway host, we know, okay, great, by default, boom, the scan is said to be bound at that TTL plus one. And I'm actually going to show you a demonstration of that in a minute, both from the PowerPoint and the actual tool. The scanning phase basically increments port numbers instead of TTLs, and instead of looking to discover hosts, we're discovering open ports. So what we do, we send a packet towards the destination, we set the packet to expire one hop by default from the gateway, and we set a timer and listen for a response. If a response is received before this timer expires, the protocol in question is allowed through. If not, it is probably, hopefully, denied by the gateway. Everything's worked out according to our plan, maybe. And I'm going to cover that also in a second. There's an ancient firewalking diagram that we came up with. You've got, you know, your internet cloud with n number of hops. You've got your firewalking host, your packet filter, which you're actually scanning through, and then here's your destination host. I put it beyond another router and whatnot just to further emphasize the fact that you'd like there to be one hop in between. That used to be necessary with the old tool, not so anymore, necessarily. Okay, so let's go through a sample firewalk. This is the initial ramping phase. Again, we've got our same network as before. But this time we're only interested in, see, you can't really see it up here. There's brilliant colors on my screen. A few of the hosts are grayed out, some aren't. The source host, the next host being Bush, Helms, Turner, are the hosts that we're interested in, and also Casey. So basically what we're doing is we're firewalking through Turner towards destination. So what we do is we send out our ICMP, rather we send out our UDP packets or whatever we're doing the ramping phase with, UDP or TCP, it's protocol independent. And we're getting back our time to live expires. Now we know, great, boom, we hit Turner, that's our target gateway. The scan is said to be bound at that TTL, which was 3 plus 1, which is 4 hops. So now we start sending packets through to expire at KC, which is 4 hops away. And we try different port and protocol combinations and whatnot. We get back, depending on what type of packet we're sending and depending on what's going on, hopefully we're getting back our time to live expires, or if they're being dropped by Turner, we're getting nothing back. Is there any questions so far about anything? The false negative scenario I mentioned before, nothing is ever as simple as it seems. Just because packets are not coming back does not necessarily mean that our target gateway in question is dropping them. What if there happened to be a filtering, you know, a firewall in between, you know, our attacking firewalking host and the target gateway? We'll never know. These packets will be dropped. As far as we know, they're being dropped by the packet, the filter in question, the target. We don't know. That's what this diagram is. I don't even know if you guys can read that text on your slides, that small text in there. The packet filter in the box at the bottom is one that's actually doing some filtering and dropping packets. So what we do to circumvent this false negative situation is we do what's called a slow walk. The cool thing about firewalk is David and I were able to invent tons and tons of new terminology. We'd like to know. So what we do is we just perform a firewalk scan on each hop and route to the target. If we come across a filtering framework on one of these gateways, a firewall, then we mark that down, and we cannot scan that protocol port combination any further on that route. So we either need to try a different route or not know what's happening there. Risk mitigation. It's pretty simple to keep your networks from your firewalls and networks from being scanned, and if you block outgoing TTL expired in transit messages, or if you have a pretty strict firewalling situation, or network address translation, proxy servers, those are all keep it from happening. So let's talk a little bit about the next generation tool quickly. How are we doing on time, by the way? Okay, that's great. That's right on schedule, actually. The next generation tool, I wanted to come up with a name for it, and I was coming across all these Firewalker Texas Ranger and Firewalk Faith Healer and all this sort of stuff, and then I really don't much care for any of those. So I came up with Liedenfrost? Does anyone know who Liedenfrost is? Anyone ever done firewalking? Okay, supposedly it's a very spiritual thing, and it changes people's lives. Anyway, a lot of the skeptics try and explain away, how can people walk on, hot coals, which are, ow, that hurts, and that's really hot, it's fire. Why would you want to walk on it? This is some German scientists who, the Liedenfrost effect is one way that skeptics explain away how firewalking works. So that's what the new version is termed. So originally when I talked about writing a new tool, I said, okay, well, we're going to have new protocols to scan with. In fact, the old tool, if you look at the code, there's hooks in there for doing ICMP-based scans. However, unless I really want to write checks for every type of ICMP packet and the possible responses I may or may not get, I can't scan with ICMP error messages because you're not going to get an error message back from an ICMP error message. So the new tool actually only does TCP and UDP at this point. However, it would be trivial to add hooks for other protocols that might be somewhat interesting at the transport layer, perhaps IGMP or you know, maybe some routing protocols, things of that nature. Not in there yet, but you know, possibly planned. More intelligence on the part of the scan. This was the big one. This is what we says not really there. That's great. This is what we really wanted to do. Is we wanted to give people the opportunity to be able to scan with a metric host that is, before it required the metric host to be at least one hop from your target gateway. You know, that's no good. You know, lots of times you can't do that. So I rewrote the code to allow you to do that more or less. But there exist certain issues with these transport layer protocols, which we'll talk about in a minute, that sort of prohibit that to a certain extent. Code's more efficient now. It's much better designed. It's concise. It's modular. It's much easier to follow if you ever want to look at you know, how to write code on top of LibNet or anything. I mean, how many people in here are programmers? Does anyone see programmers in here? Okay, like I'm talking to maybe 10 people, and I'll stop. It's got the GUI, which I'm going to redo also. I wrote a GUI for it. I'm going to redo that and make it a lot better and actually stable. So I talked about these transport layer issues. Let's take, for example, we've got a gateway and our metric host, which are sitting right next to each other. And we're going to send packets. We're going to set them to expire one hop from our gateway right at the metric host. So we're not going to get back our ICMP TTL expired in transit message because, you know what, the packet doesn't expire in transit. It reaches its destination. Previous firewalk would choke at this point. It wouldn't know what to do. So now I put more intelligence on the part of the scanner, and with TCP scan we're sending out SYN packets. So we know what we're going to get back. We're either going to get back a SYNAC if the port's open. A SYNAC if the port's open. We know definitely that's going to happen. If the port's open, you know, just about everything out there that wants to establish a TCP-based connection is going to comply with this. It's going to send back a SYNAC with your, you know, with its acknowledgement number as your sequence number plus one. But however, in the case of a closed port, the RFC says send back a reset ACK with your ACK as the sequence number of the packet that caused the error message plus one. However, lots of operating systems don't comply with this. Microsoft breaks this all over the place. You'll see resets come back without the ACK bit set. You'll see resets come back without an ACK number. Sometimes the ACK number will be your sequence number. Sometimes it'll be a RAM number. All kinds of stuff. These are some of the checks that NMAP looks for when it's doing OS fingerprinting. This is not good for us. We need, you know, fingerprinting. We need standard behavior across the board. So. Well, actually, I'll talk about how I mitigated that in a minute. Let's talk about the UDP issues, which are actually far more annoying. UDP scans, if you're doing like a regular UDP port scan, this is in essence what we're kind of doing there. We're doing port scans. UDP scan looks for basically negatives. It's sort of an inverse scan, because when you're sending an arbitrary UDP datagram to an arbitrary UDP port, what are you going to get back? You're going to get back an ICMP port unreachable if the port's closed. If the port's open, you know, it's going to pass that packet up to the application. The application's going to say, what is this packet? Do I know what to do with this? Probably not. It's probably going to drop it. That's how UDP scanning has traditionally been done. That's not good enough for us, though, because if it drops the packet, that's going to look like a false negative to us when that might not be the case. So how are we going to get around that? Well, with TCP, we get around with this by offering a flag to the program. Strict RFC compliance or loose RFC compliance. With the strict compliance, we're actually RFC 793 compliant. We make sure that the packets that come back have a reset ACK set and their acknowledgement numbers are seek plus one. Loose RFC compliance just looks at port numbers. Doesn't look at any of the this other stuff. And we're basically loosening the granularity of the scan there, and we you know, there's the potential for false negatives there, of course. In practice, I haven't seen too many of these false negatives, but you know, it definitely can happen. With UDP, the only way to do this is with service anticipation. We have to construct legal packets for the targeted port. And this is somewhat difficult or infeasible. However, I was talking with Hobbit last night, and you know, he brought up a good idea, and I might actually implement this. We'll just set up, you know, we'll just have an array of legal packet types, and we'll just append a payload. Firewalk right now sends out packet headers, no payloads at all. We'll send out UDP payloads for, you know, ports we may want to scan. For example, it's easy enough to build a DNS packet or you know, an SNMP packet, things of that nature. However, arbitrary UDP ports you know, since there's no reliability, there's no connection initiation phase, there's no three-way handshake, there's nothing going on there. So if it's an arbitrary port, you know, you're sunk. That's just the nature of the protocol. Anyway, that's basically the conclusion of this part of the talk. I'm going to reboot this really quick after a... Well, there's the web resource. Firewalk is kept up at packetfactory.net along with TracerX and LibNet. TracerX is not quite done yet. But you can get all this stuff up there and try it out for yourself. The code is portable across several Unix platforms. Not to Win32 yet. And that's my email address at the bottom if anyone wants to ever talk shop about anything or has any good ideas. And while I'm rebooting this, you know, I'd love to open the floor up to questions about anything related to this stuff. And if there aren't any, then I guess you can murmur amongst yourselves for a couple minutes.
Mike?
Yes?
If there's a route reconvergence while you're doing a scan and it changes the hop count.
I'm sorry, what was that?
While you're doing the scan and the hop count change?
Yeah, I mean, if all of a sudden there's an asymmetric route involved, you know, I actually haven't, in the course of testing this, which involved thousands and thousands of scans, I haven't come across that, but it definitely can happen. I mean, I tested a reasonably stable network portion. Asymmetric routes are probably going to, all sorts of weird things are going to happen. Actually, the one thing that I did notice when I was, so I wish I had an internet connection here because we could scan some hosts and I could show you some real world stuff. When Cheswick was talking about, he noticed there was like a quintuply redundant situation with all these different routers. You know, whoever gets the packet sends back a response. The code seemed to handle that okay. When I was alternating, I was scanning a network. I shouldn't actually say who I was. Oh, whoops. Hi. Thanks. See, it's black there, and that's really irritating. Anyway, it handles it fine, whichever, you know, router sends back the TTL expired or whatnot. But as far as like a serious asymmetric route, I should work. Oh, good. All right. Why didn't they save all the you know, the lights and sirens for now? This won't take too long though. 15, 20 minutes and be done.
It's not Solaris.
What's that?
It's not Solaris and people go back.
Actually, while this is going, I can talk about my interesting little anecdote that deals with Solaris and why Firewalk doesn't work under Solaris. It's because when we originally wrote the Firewalk code, we wrote it on top of LibNet, which again is that packet injection library. And we wrote it using basically RawSockets interface. And RawSockets are horribly non-standard across implementations. They're not very portable, and they're not very raw at all. They're not very robust. However, at the time, that was all LibNet supported. LibNet did not support any link layer packet injection capabilities, which would write the packet directly to the Ethernet layer as opposed to the IP layer. Anyhow, Solaris raw sockets are probably some of the worst you'll come across. And not to bag on Solaris at all. I don't know, if Jeremy's even out here, which he's probably not, he would probably stand up and start arguing with me. But he will agree with me on the fact that raw sockets are terrible. You can't set a lot of things like, for example, it's taking forever. Isn't it? IP IDs, you can't set. IP frag bits, you can't set. The TCP sequence, or TCP checksum. If anyone's ever done any network programming under Solaris, they'll understand. It's a pain. So anyway, at the time when Firewalk was originally written, it wouldn't work under Solaris, and that's continued up until a patch to this version, and then it'll be portable across Solaris and any other similarly behaving operating system. One other point I didn't mention that I wanted to mention was, why does TraceRoute do this port incrementation? You know, it's bewildering, it's irritating, it seems rather arbitrary. And the reason is, the code was written 10.5 years ago. APIs that exist today did not exist then. He had no easy portable way of actually specifying if multiple scans were going on. There was no easy way for them to be differentiated across if they're on the same machine. So in order to uniquely identify packets to a particular TraceRoute scan, he incremented the ports. I set IP IDs. It's a lot easier that way. Hey, look at that. Hey, all right. Let's hope I can get this to work. Okay. So far, so good. Anyone know the naming convention of the machines?
Yes.
CIA directors, thank you, DCIs. Anyone know what the double X committee was? XX committee. 20 committee, sorry. That's just the name of my machine. That might be a tougher one, but if the DIA guys are in here. Actually, no, it wasn't. Was it really? Well, then I'm going to get off topic, so I'll talk to you about this offline. all right. Okay, so what we've got here is we've got the network that they set up, and I am fortuitous enough to be able to use that. And we're going to run a sample firewalk here, and that's probably not even legible at all. Let me go on ahead and read that off to you. We're going to...
Make the font bigger.
Oh, I would if I could. It's going to take me a couple minutes. Someone who's better with X, tell me the switches to... That's RXVT though. That's not an X term. This. Oops. But for an RXVT, doesn't work for RXVT. It's a little better. All right. Let's try that. Okay. All right. Anyway, the type of scan, we're going to do a simple standard TCP-based scan through the network here. It's not a very deep network, so we're not going to do a lot of the ramping phase. The network discovery phase is going to be really really quick, actually. And I think actually it's going to only go out one hop. But we will be able to see all sorts of dynamic things in action here. The Cisco that we're this 10.1.1 box. Is I believe the Cisco and the 192.168.1.10. What kind of box is that? It doesn't matter. FreeBSD box. It doesn't matter. That's our metric host. Generally speaking, we don't really care what the metric host is. In this case, however, it's going to be significant because we're going to actually be contacting that box because it's going to be adjacent to one hop from our gateway rather. So now that's. Oh, you know what? Sort of forgot here. I should have done this beforehand. What was it? Oh, yeah, 10.1. Was it 10.1.1.75? Is that what I picked? All right. But it was a class. Good. And what was my default gateway again? Was it? That was it, I think. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Let's try that again. Okay. I'm going to pipe the epitome more so we can talk about it and take a look at it real quick. And you can't see that. All right. Okay. At the top, firewalk gives us some diagnostic information. Sure, it's firewalking through 10.1.1.1 using 192.168.1.10 as a metric host. Ramping phase source port by default is 53. We specified a destination port of 25. That's not really necessary. I just left it. I just did that because when we were testing this stuff, it was the Cisco had some filter rules, and I wanted to be able to test something, but it doesn't matter. Anyhow, we're doing TCP-based scan, and we're using strict RFC adherence. We're complying to the RFC 793, like I said before. Well, the ramping phase goes out one hop. We found our binding host already. So now the scan is bound at two hops. And by default, I think we're scanning 1 through 139, maybe, something like that, and then maybe a few other ports. We'll see. Anyhow, it tells us that all these ports are open on the Cisco, which they are. The filtering rules on the Cisco, by the way, are everything is open right now except for port 135 through 139. We had those closed down. So what's happening is Firewalk's actually reaching out, sending out packets that are expiring, or set to expire, one hop from the gateway, but they're actually landing on the metric host, and they're reaching the host, so we're getting back these reset acts. So it's telling us, we're actually port scanning that host. The port is open on our gateway, the port is not listening on our target, or rather our metric. Port 22 and 23, however, SSH and Telnet are open on that host, so it lets us know, it tells us those ports are listening. And we go through a bunch of other ports that are closed, and that 79 finger is open. So is ident the, and down at the bottom there, 139, we don't know the status of that port because the Cisco is prohibiting that, and we're getting back an ICMP port unreachable. So that port is actually should be closed. But we don't know the status of the port on the far end. And again, 1025 is open. And then there's some statistics at the end there of the scan and whatnot. It's usually a little bit more interesting when we do it across the internet. You know, all sorts of fun things can happen. And as far as how do you choose, a lot of people ask, how do you choose the, if you say you're auditing a network, how do you choose this metric host? Well, Cheswick talked about it yesterday. It's usually pretty easy to guess a host behind, if you've got a certain network and network number, it's pretty easy to figure it out at that point. You know, there's a lot of ways you can do it. Anyway, at this point, I think I'm pretty much done. And I think I'm pretty much, what time is it?
2:24.
Okay, we've got 7 minutes left.
Dance for us.
All right. questions, yeah.
Have you had any success with this through like an application level gateway? I would guess no, but I'm just curious.
No, I mean, if there's like, you know, like I said, if there's like proxy stuff going on and things of that nature, then no, not really. There's another, yes?
Do you think it might be possible to do this across the map?
You'd have to determine, what the internal addressing scheme is going to be like. That's actually a good point. The other thing is, though, is if you're picking a metric host of an internal network number, is that what you're saying?
No. If the metric host is an added host, it really doesn't matter. What matters if you're trying to scan something that came from that device on that device and that stuff.
Your metric host is being the host that, which the metric is what?
It's a static added host, so one-to-one.
Okay, but what type of address is it? If it's internal, are you going to be able to use that as a destination address through the internet?
How about a source routing?
That's a good point. That might work. I haven't played around with much source routing stuff with this at all. To be honest. There's another question over there, I think. Well, the thing is, though, is say you've got your NAT host, and you pick that as your gateway. You want to scan that host. What's your metric going to be?
Yeah.
If you pick your metric as a host behind that, an internal. The question was. What was the question? I totally lost track. I know what I was trying to say, though. Okay, right. But, I mean, where are you going to pick your metric host to be? If you pick it to be one of these RFC 1597 internal network numbers, the 10 dot star, the 192, 168, 176, 16s, they're not going to be routed. They're not going to go through. They're going to be dropped.
And that host could be a metric, but you would have to test a gateway in front of.
Yeah, there'd have to be a gateway. The NAT host can be a metric, but nothing inside your network is going to happen. I wish I had a whiteboard. I could draw this, and everyone would just be like so enlightened. But anyhow, you do what you can. Is there another question over there? What? He asked a question about source routing, and
then source routing goes through actual.
You guys want to come on up here? Are there any other questions? He brings up a good point, though, and I would listen to anything he says because that guy's really smart over there. Both those guys are, actually. I it's still ongoing. Talking about how to potentially do it through source routing and whatnot. I didn't catch all of it, but caught much of it. Any other comments or anything? The new version of this firewalk tool, which you see here, is not available yet, but I hope to have it finished pretty soon.
Can you use the internal interface so the firewall is metric?
That's actually kind of what we're doing right here. Sort of. The internal interface of the firewall is a metric. Sure. Yeah, that should work. That should work too. Definitely. I mean, if the firewall is going to apply its filter, it's going to take a look at the packet and say, okay, it's destined for. It comes in on this interface. Where's it going? You know, it doesn't belong here. I need to forward it on somewhere. It applies its filter information to it. It should. All right. Then thank you very much for your time.